Well, it's a very unsettled time, I think, in the state of Colorado about water and river protection. You know, a lot of the proposed major dam projects will be coming to a head in 2017. And so we're going to expect to see some movement finally. And some of these projects have been, you know, talked about in a permitting process for well over a dozen years. So we're going to see some movement around that. We're also probably going to see a little bit of movement around the Colorado Water Plan issues. You know, what they mostly need to implement some aspects of that is a lot of money, and I don't think they're going to get any money at the legislature because we're probably looking at cuts again on the legislature. And so we may not see a lot of movement around Colorado Water Plan issues. But it's going to be, you know, 2016 was a fascinating year. I think 2017 is going to be even more fascinating around the issues of water and river protection, especially environmental issues, because of course, we have a new sheriff in town.
Well, we're going to talk about him in just a minute. But in terms of money that is or is not available, certainly at a state level, about implementation of the Colorado Water Plan. But if we look at what's happening with federal funding, it was recently announced that the U.S. Department of Agriculture's Natural Resources Conservation Service were awarding $7.75 million to Colorado River projects, and a lot of this is relating to Trans Mountain diversions. And when we talk about that, it's taking water from the western slope to the east, to the Front Range, because we have the growing population here and a lot of those trans basin diversions, essentially taking water from rivers in the west, putting them into the faucets of us here along the Front Range. What about that federal award? Because it's being framed as benefiting the Colorado River, but what are your thoughts on it?
Well, the Colorado River is in very bad shape. In fact, there are two proposed projects to take somewhere around 12 billion gallons of water out of the Colorado River each year over in Grand County and pipe it over to the Front Range. And so that particular grant from the Natural Resource Conservation Service is very small. It's going to make a very small difference in the actual negative impact that is going to happen to Grand County. That said, one of the things that the money's going to go do is to build what's called a bypass channel around the Windy Gap Reservoir up in Grand County, which is a good thing that needs to be done and should have been done, you know, two decades ago. And so there's going to be some good come out of it. Unfortunately, though, the trajectory is all in the wrong direction, and an $8 million is a drop in the bucket. I mean, those two proposed projects would send almost $1 billion worth of water over to the Front Range. And that's, of course, why our organization opposes them. And so, you know, $7 or $8 million is a drop in the bucket, although it's a minor positive step in the right direction.
Yeah. Well, I want to talk a little bit more about the Windy Gap project, because that actually directly impacts people in Longmont. There was a recent vote on City Council to increase water rates in 2017 to fund this. It's quite complex. But what does this federal money do for the Windy Gap Reservoir in Grand County?
Well, that money, part of it is going to be used to build a bypass channel around that little reservoir in Grand County.
And so what does that mean?
That means the Colorado River used to flow through the Windy Gap Reservoir, which was it still does, and it is a shallow reservoir, and it gets warm. And so a lot of algae grows in it, and the water gets too warm, and once the river gets out of the reservoir, the fish die. And so they're going to build a bypass, which is basically just, you know, bring in some backhoes and dozers and build a new channel around the reservoir so the river no longer flows through the reservoir. However, I mean, that's separate from the Windy Gap Firming Project, which is an actual proposed massive new diversion of water that would come through the tunnel that comes under Rocky Mountain National Park and build an enormous new reservoir west of Loveland. So that's called the Windy Gap Firming Project. And, you know, all of the participants in that project are trying to find some way to pay for it. Longmont is proposing to raise its water rates. However, it hit a major glitch when that came in front of the Longmont, because there's been a new Supreme Court ruling that's probably going to affect some of those Trans Mountain diversions, especially that project. And so things are kind of up in the air right now, and you're probably going to see some increased controversy and delays around those projects, in addition to groups like ours that oppose them. And we might, you know, end up fighting them in court if we need to.
There seems such inherent conflict in how we're setting up our water distribution system right now. And I think it's over 60% right now of the upper Colorado River's water in rivers and stream is coming from the west to the Front Range to irrigate our lawns, to, you know, help us take a bath or a shower, various different things. The population along the Front Range is projected to continue to grow. And we're seeing nothing but growth from Fort Collins all the way down to Colorado Springs. Do you see a way outside of diverting more water that can still serve the needs of a growing population here along the Front Range?
Sure. And it's not only possible, it's faster, easier, and cheaper. About half of the water we use along the Front Range from Boulder to Fort Collins and Denver and Longmont and Loveland is used to keep the grass green for 2 to 3 months in the summer. And so it is a completely unsustainable way to use water and an unsustainable and kind of ridiculous way to drain and destroy rivers. In addition, though, a vast amount of the growth that you're just talking about is growing, you know, along the I-25 corridor up and down. And a lot of that is growing on top of farms. And so these farms are going to go out of business anyway. And a lot of them are going out of business and they're selling their land and their water. And so transferring that water to the cities is also a smart thing to do. And there's a little bit of movement in that direction, but it needs to go much faster. So in short, we don't have to drain and destroy the rivers anymore because there's very little water left in the rivers. And so if these last projects go through, it's just going to take them all to the very end. And then they're going to have to go to Plan B, which is to buy water from farmers and start conserving. And so we think they should do that first. So conservation is always the fastest, easiest, cheapest way to go. And also finding ways to work with farmers. Farmers have vast amounts of water. In fact, 80% of the water is used to grow corn and hay out here on the Eastern Plains. Much of that is used to, you know, feed cattle, which is shipped all over the planet. And so there's some tremendously unsustainable ways that water is being used, and there's a lot smarter ways to use it that are also faster and easier, cheaper. And so when we say we're going to try to stop these projects, we're not trying to stop anyone from getting water. We're trying to get them to get water in a faster, easier, cheaper way that's more sustainable and makes more sense.
In terms of taking that water away from those agricultural water rights holders.
And just let me interrupt real quickly. You never take water away from a farmer.
You buy it.
A farmer owns the water and they choose to sell it. They don't ever have to sell their water. And when they sell it, they make exorbitant amounts of money. And so it isn't someone's water is being taken away. That's called eminent domain, and that has never happened in the state of Colorado where a city or whoever is taking water away from a farmer. It's always a willing buyer, willing seller, and it involves enormous amounts of money.
So in terms of the sale of those, well, no, that's a good point, Gary, because we have to be very careful about the language that we use.
We do.
But when farmers are selling their water rights, very often the value of that water right exceeds the value of the land. That might not be as true along the I-25 corridor because land is so expensive, but certainly maybe in southern Colorado and further east. And there has been concern about the impact on agricultural communities when those water rights are sold. Do you see a way that we can have an agricultural economy here in the state and value the rural parts of Colorado that rely on agriculture and still serve the needs of a growing population in urban areas as well? And I suppose that's a very convoluted way of saying, is there a lot of water that could be conserved in agriculture? That we're seeing a lot of conservation in urban areas, but what about in agriculture? Is that, given that 80% of the water in the state is going to agriculture, what are some of the opportunities to conserve water there?
Well, I'm not an expert in agricultural water use, but I follow it, you know, somewhat closely. There are enormous opportunities to conserve water in agriculture. And we're seeing some small steps in that direction here in the state of Colorado. The Colorado Water Plan tried to move a little bit of that forward and tried to deal with it somewhat. But it's also going to cost an extraordinary amount of money. I mean, again, the water is worth an extraordinary amount of money. And, you know, you basically have to find a way to pay farmers to irrigate their land differently or grow different crops. And there's a lot of options there, and that can certainly happen. The other thing that can happen, though, is what we also call rotational fallowing. It's kind of a complicated, you know, wonky word. But so the farmers don't have to grow their crops every year, and especially in dry years, they can rent their water to a city, and in wet years, they can farm. So there's a lot of opportunities to change the way we use water so that, the needs can be met. But I will say this, you know, just to be quite frank, you have the cities, and you have the rivers, and you have the farms, and something's got to give, and that's all there is to it. And the rivers have already given way too much, as you noted earlier. In the town of Hot Sulphur Springs, which is about 20 miles downstream from Grand County, from Rocky Mountain National Park there in Grand County, 70% of the Colorado River is gone. And if the two projects get built that we're trying to stop, that would be 80%. And so, you know, you've already, like, there's nothing left to squeeze out of the rivers. And we need to start squeezing the cities, and which is happening, but needs to happen much more. And we need to start finding real positive ways to work with farmers, because once again, the farmers have almost all of the water.
And when we say that they have the water, where is that water coming from? Is that relying on trans basins?
Almost all comes out of, almost all comes out of rivers, yeah. I mean, almost every river, the South Platte River still has some water in it that hasn't been drained out by the state of Colorado, but, you know, it's like 70-80% gone by the time it hits state's line. The Arkansas River is sometimes 70-80% gone by the time it hits state's line. Every river is basically tapped out almost as far as it can get legally by the time it hits the state line. And 80-85% of that water, and 90% someplace in the West Slope, is all drained out to grow crops. And almost of that is corn and hay. Almost all of that is fed to cows. And almost all of it is shipped to slaughterhouses and shipped all over the planet. And so it's not like we're talking about, you know, sort of mom and pop organic farms growing vegetables. A vast amount of it is raising cattle for multinational corporate agriculture to create this international trade in cheap beef.
We're speaking with Gary Wachner this morning. He's with Save the Poudre and Save the Colorado River, two rivers in the state that are certainly in crisis due to the water being extracted from them. He's also author of the new book, River Warrior, Fighting to Protect the World's Rivers. And he joins us this morning on KGNU to take a look back at 2016 in river and water policy here in the state, and looking ahead to 2017. And of course, 2017, Gary, brings a lot of changes at a federal level. And in terms of Trump appointments, the one that probably has the biggest impact on water issues here in the state, certainly if we look at the Colorado River, is the Secretary of the Interior. What are your thoughts on Ryan Zinke?
Well, the Secretary of Interior is a very important appointment in terms of how the Colorado River is managed and all the landscapes in the entire West. I'm going to word it slightly differently, though. There's really four appointments. It's Zinke, it's Perry at Energy, it's Tillerson at Secretary of State, and it's Scott Pruitt at EPA. Basically, Donald Trump has not appointed the cabinet. He has installed a cartel. And that cartel is to represent the oil industry. And so you are going to see a vast takeover of American foreign policy and American state policy and sort of just the policies around how lands are managed in the western United States and all the lands around the Colorado River Basin. And there are tens, if not hundreds of millions of lands that are owned by the federal government around the Colorado River that are going to be basically increasingly given over to the oil industry. And so that's the change we're going to see. Now, you know, when Donald Trump was running for president, he made all sorts of promises, and he appears to be walking a lot of those back, you know, in terms of things he said he was going to do. But one thing he definitely said he was going to do was going to completely gut regulations and create a massive oil drilling boom in the United States, and he appears to be moving headlong and forward into that. In terms of Zinke specifically, he has been certainly deeply in the pocket of the oil and gas industry, so we're concerned about that. We're also concerned about some of his positions about dams. He's promoted some dams up in Montana and Idaho, so we're going to keep a close eye on it.
Well, in terms of the oil and gas industry and its impact on water resources, is it more of a concern in terms of impact on water quality or impact on water quantity, or can you really separate the two?
Yeah, I'd say it's two things. One is that they may not be able to impact the actual flow in the river that much. However, if, you know, again, there are hundreds of millions of acres of BLM lands and Forest Service lands and Park Service lands and national monuments along the Colorado River. And so if those lands are going to basically, and that river is going to be ringed with oil and gas wells, it's going to be an extremely different experience than people are used to. The second thing I'll say, though, has to do with this cartel of a cabinet he's proposing to install, and that they're all climate deniers. One of the single biggest threats to the Colorado River is climate change. We're right now on the 17th year of this proposed, you know, either it's a drought or it's actually climate change is already happening. And the flows in the river are already down dramatically. And so if you have basically the oil business and the oil executives running the policy around climate, and they don't believe in climate change, you're not going to see any improvement there whatsoever, and you're only going to see things getting worse, and so that's going to definitely impact flows in the Colorado River, and so that's a serious concern.
I've talked with other people whose, you know, mission in their professional career is around conservation, whether it's on land or air or natural resources. And I kind of have been asking many people the same question. When we look at certainly federal agencies who are charged with looking after this, whether it's the BLM, whether it's the Department of the Interior, is their mandate one of conserving our natural resources, or is it a mandate to really extract the biggest economic component that they can from the natural resources?
Well, every agency has a slightly different mandate. The National Park Service has the most preservationist mandate. The Bureau of Land Management has the least preservation mandate. So it varies by land management agency. However, all of those are controlled by the President of the United States and the cabinet that he appoints. And so they all have some ability to move dramatically towards a more pro oil and gas bent, some more than others. And so he said he's going to do it, and he's got a website up about describing how he's going to do it, and he's appointed this cartel of a cabinet to do it. So we expect him to do it, and it's going to be really, I think it's going to be kind of a war on the West, and it's going to be really kind of a gut time for the environmental movement in the Western United States, but also for the public. You know, just to see how far this administration tries to push, and if the public has an interest in pushing back. I think the public does. I think the public wants to protect public lands. They want to protect the Colorado River. So it's going to be somewhat of an epic 2017 and maybe a little bit of an epic war on the West, and we'll see how it all turns out.
People living on the Western Slope have a very different reality when it comes to water and these issues that we're talking about. They can just walk down to their local river or stream and really see how it's being diminished. Here along the Front Range, we're still able to turn on our faucet and have water coming out. And so are we likely to see that relationship change? Are we going to see different impacts here? And do we need to be impacted in a more, I suppose, concrete way here in the Front Range to change that relationship with water?
I mean, here's the bottom line. Part of the semi-paranoia that happened during the Colorado Water Plan process and continues to happen is this sort of sky is falling threat that somebody's going to go to their faucet, there's not going to be water there. That is just simply false, and it's not going to happen. You know, every city and every town along the Front Range spends a vast amount of time and a vast amount of money making sure that people are going to have water, and there's an extraordinary amount of water. Again, almost all of it goes out to grow crops and corn and hay along the Front Range. And a lot of that water is for sale. And so we're never going to run out of water. What it's going to be about, though, is the price of water. And so you might find a time where the price of water actually starts to equal the value of water. So in other words, you can't stand in your driveway with your hose and hose your driveway off because, like, oh, gosh, that's going to cost me like $8 to hose my driveway off. Or we won't be able to continue growing extraordinary low-value crops that are unsustainable and doing these massive flood irrigation options here along the Front Range. So we're not going to run out of water. It might get more expensive, and it may need to get more expensive. It really has to do with just sort of like some sound water management policies because, you know, again, the rivers along the Front Range are drained or being drained. The rivers along the West Slope are drained or being drained, all to feed this sort of massive sort of, you know, scheme about we have to grow grass here in the desert. And again, half of the water, you know, just it's important to focus on the facts. Half of the water from Denver to Colorado Springs to Boulder to Fort Collins is used to keep the grass green in 2 or 3 months a year. And, you know, it's just unsustainable. It makes no sense.
Are we seeing, though, a change in that attitude? Because I know different municipalities and communities along the Front Range that are tackling this issue of how do you balance growth with, you know, a finite amount of resources, i.e. water. Offering incentives to developers, offering incentives to homeowners and renters in terms of low flow, things that you can have in your house. But also, you know, don't plant a lawn. We have Xeriscape issues that we can, we have xeriscaping that can be implemented, and we're seeing some kind of movement away from that. Do you think, though, that's just window dressing, that we're really not seeing enough of a focus and a real push to rip out lawns along the Front Range?
Well, we're seeing a movement. It's been slow and it's been soft. On the other hand, if you go to Las Vegas, if you go to Phoenix, if you go to San Diego, if you go to Los Angeles, if you go to Los Angeles in particular, they have spent hundreds of millions of dollars paying people to rip out the grass and xeriscape or put in very low flow landscaping or low water landscaping. That is not happening anywhere in the state of Colorado. Colorado is going to the status quo, which is we're going to drain and destroy the rivers first, and then we'll go to Plan B, which is conservation, trying to work with farmers. If you go to Southern California, other parts in Arizona or Las Vegas, there's no Plan A. There's no water. They can't take any more water out of the rivers, so they're forced to go to Plan B now. What we're saying is, let's go to Plan B first. Let's try to save what's left of the rivers, and if anything, let's try to get more water back in the rivers, not take more out. And let's go to Plan B because we know it works. We know it's cheaper, it's faster, and it's easier. We know it's sustainable. You don't have to build a billion-dollar dam and go through like a multi-year court battle and spend 20 years trying to get a permit. You can do it tomorrow morning. And so there are a lot of smart, easy, fast ways to do landscaping that need to happen. What we see along the Front Range, though, is a lot of the same cities that are trying to build more dams and diversions and drain the rivers are also spending some money on conservation, and it's pretty much just window dressing. They do a little bit here, do a little bit there, and say, but we still need the massive dam, we still need to drain the river. So it needs to change dramatically, and that's where a group like ours comes in. Save the Poudre, which is trying to protect the Poudre River in Fort Collins and save the Colorado. You know, we're going to just stand in their way and say no. No more dams, no more draining and destroying the rivers. You have to go to Plan B now, and we'll do what we can. Maybe we'll win, lose, or maybe it's a draw, but we're going to do what we can to try to force the public policy and force these cities to go to Plan B, because we know that they can do it, because all around the Southwest United States, other cities are doing it. We know it's faster, easier, and cheaper. It's just almost like there's this inertia that is this, you know, forcing them to try to go to this like 50 to 100 year old plan and this mindset, and it needs to move forward fast. And that's a job of an aggressive, you know, progressive environmental organization like ours, is to try to move the bar fast forward and try to get some consequential change.
Well, as we finish up, as we look ahead to 2017, what can listeners do to be paying attention, or what should they pay attention to in terms of water here in Colorado, either at a state level, at a federal level, and how can people get involved?
Sure. We're going to see some movement around the proposed dam and diversion projects in the state in Colorado. We'll probably see the federal agencies finish up the permitting processes. And when that happens, you know, you'll see a lot of information in the news about what's happened and how people can gauge. Organizations like ours are trying to stop that from happening. We're also probably going to see, you know, just to be frank, and I know we're heading into the holiday season here and you don't want to be too negative, but we're going to see a massive a bloodbath of the United States Congress, the House and the Senate, and the President pushing bills through that try to gut the Clean Water Act, the National Environmental Policy Act, the Endangered Species Act, the Safe Drinking Water Act. And everyone needs to be aware of that, and we need to engage locally, statewide, and in D.C. to protect what we have right now, because it's going to be a difficult year. Now, but I don't want to end on a negative note, end on a slightly more positive note. At the same time that we're seeing these massive attacks, we're also seeing, I think, a lot of groups like mine and a lot of the big groups, you know, who tend to be more moderate are finally putting their foot down and say, we need to stop this. We need to find a way to, like, turn the tide in different directions. So I'd say continue to get engaged locally, continue to get engaged with environmental organizations, and, you know, we'll see what happens in 2017.
And rip out your lawn.
Rip out your lawn, yeah.
Gary Wachner is with Save the Poudre and Save the Colorado River, and we will link to both of those websites at kgnu.org. His latest book is River Warrior: Fighting to Protect the World's Rivers. Thanks very much.
Thanks, Maeve.